What's the point I'm making? Put yourself in a position where people can't tell you, and then you act in such a way and you develop the kind of ego where it becomes very difficult for devotees to approach you and to give you the instruction you need to hear. Right? And I'm seeing this at the moment amongst devotees. It's not a good quality. I was actually speaking to Anirudha Prabhu about it this morning, because there's some devotees that we need to speak to at this point in time within the community. And they put themselves in a position where they cannot hear from other devotees. The only person I listen to is practically his guru. And what do we call a devotee who only listens to the guru? Kanishtha Adhikari. Means even though they appear to be advanced, actually it's a symptom of not a very progressed personality. Because the only way you can progress is when you listen to the Vaishnava community. If devotees, not one devotee even, I mean even if one devotee points something else, we should listen, but if you've got a group of devotees and they're having the same consensus and they're speaking to you and they're trying to point something out to you and you're not accepting it, right, then you're putting yourself in a position, it's very difficult for you to advance, and you won't overcome these anattas. Now, I remember last year or the year before, I did something, which was not appropriate, but I couldn't see it at the time. I didn't think it was so serious, but it wasn't really serious, but it was serious enough. So then the temple authorities, they called me, they spoke to me, and a number of them spoke to me. And then I went away and I reflected on it, and they came back and said, actually, you're right. And the more I reflect on it over time, I see it was correct. And I see my mistake, and I've learned from it. And we have to be like that as devotees. It's a symptom of spiritual advancement when someone points out your fault and you listen and you rectify yourself. If you don't listen, right, there's a sign that you're not a very advanced devotee. And this happens. And sometimes someone's pointing something out to you and you're not accepting the critique or the...
Not accepting the truth.
Not accepting the truth. You're not allowing yourself to see it. So this is not a symptom of advancement. A symptom of advancement as a devotee is when someone can point out your faults, right? And you can accept it graciously. I mean, no one likes to hear it, but you can accept it and you can reflect upon it and you grow from it. Right? Whereas quite often what happens is as soon as we say something negative, everyone gets very defensive, argumentative. It's not a sign of advancement, actually. Prabhupada said that he and his godbrothers, they prefer the chastisement of Bhakti Sanda Saraswati Thakur to the praise. That's a sign of advancement. Right? When that genuinely takes place. I know some devotees in my life, whenever I tell them something, it just turns into an argument. So when you have that kind of consciousness, which is a neophyte Kanishtha Adhikari consciousness, you can't advance in Krishna consciousness because people can't tell you what you need to hear. Even my spiritual master said one time, the last time he came to Australia actually, he was giving darshan, and he said, actually, I can only tell my disciples about 10% of what they need to hear. Because they're not advanced enough to take it. What they really need to hear, I can't actually tell them. So when you advance, you can be told these things. And you will accept it and you'll improve. Otherwise you can't. What are you going to be, a lazy person for the rest of your life? Is that what you're going to be, lazy for the rest of your life? If devotees are telling you that, you need to not just hear, but you need to rectify your behavior. Change. My spiritual master chastised me one time, just up there on that landing. I was there, I said something, we had a darshan, I said something, he was upset. So then when he left, he went to the bathroom, everyone else left, it was just me and him. He came out, I said, I'm sorry. He said, I don't want your apology. He said, I want you to change. And he slammed the door. I walked in Tamal Krishna Maharaj style. Slam the door. He said, I don't want your apology, I want you to change. I don't want to see the same Keshava all the time. He said that to me. And I want to see the same Keshava. I want change. Right? He slammed the door in there. So this is the point. When the guru, at one time, you know, Giriraj Maharaj, he said to Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, it's not easy when you chastise. And Tamal Krishnamurti said that to me one time. Because he was, Tamal Krishnamurti was very heavy. Like very, you know. When he chastised you, you understood what the meaning of the word chastisement is. And he told me, he said, this is nothing compared to Prabhupada. When Prabhupada chastised you, that was... Now you understand what chastisement is, when Prabhupada chastises. So Giriraj Maharaj, one time he said to Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, is very difficult when you chastise us. How should we react? How should we feel? Prabhupada said, you should feel very grateful that someone cares about you enough that they actually point out your faults. A real friend is someone who points out your where you need to improve. Anyone can tell you all the nice things. That's easy. Oh, you're so nice. Oh, you're so... That's easy. Anyone can do that. But a real friend is someone who tells you what you need to hear. Just like my one of my best friends. What's his name? Atul Krishna Prabhu. Yeah, I forgot his name. So he's staying up there at the moment. Right? Atul Krishna Prabhu. Stay up there. So he's one of my best friends. Yeah, we... Brahmacharis together, we used to live down the... We shared a room together for years. One of my best friends, right? So, you know, last few days he's been here, so we've been spending time together, right? And we speak. And he'll say things to me which other people won't say. And I'll say things to him. Sometimes he'll ask me, he'll say, what do you think about this? And I'll give him the real answer, right? And that's what a friend is. You know, you don't want a friend who's just going to tell you all the nice things. You know, we say nice things to each other. But sometimes we discuss deeper things. He says, this is happening like that. And I say, well, you know, you're acting like that, but I don't think that's the right way to act. Right? But that's a real friend. You can say these things. Right? And we appreciate it. I'd rather have a friend like that than someone who just, you know, will tell you all the nice things. That's easy. So, this is an anat we need to get rid of. To think we're a great devotee or to think we're a guru. Of course we are gurus. All of us are gurus. Right? And all devotees are great. Right? But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, when you think you are great, you become fallen. Right? So we should not have the mentality or the abhiman that I am a great devotee. So as I said before, so what is the remedy? If we have this problem, because we all have the problem, what's the remedy? What's that? Yeah, okay, that's the mentality, but what's the practical application? Nice, that's good. What else? Huh? Yeah, that's important. Yeah, we have to be, but what else?
I think one should hear first what the person is saying and then give a bit of time, think about it.
Yeah, that's good. But what else? So how do we rectify this anatta? Thinking we're a great devotee and a guru.
And then
the very good. That's the actual point, right? The only way you can overcome this anatta, you have to do service to the devotees. And what happens? I see it. I'm seeing it at the moment. I'm observing it amongst devotees. We get in this consciousness, I'm the senior, and everyone can serve me. Yeah, deliver the prasadam, do this whole thing, and it's not the mood of the devotee, actually. The mood of the devotee is he does service. You know, if you see this anatta in yourself, do practical service for devotees. Serve them. Right? Do menial services, practical services for devotees. Serve prasad. Go out and serve prasad. Don't just sit there. I see people come here all the time. You know, there's some people who come here for lunch nearly every day to this temple. Not necessarily in the temple, but, you know, people who come here. They know about the temple. They come, and every day they just come and they just sit down and eat. And I say to them sometimes, why don't you do something? Why don't you do something? You see, everyone here is working so hard to provide this facility for you and these meals, and you don't do anything. And then one of them said to me, I carry the buckets upstairs. And I said, congratulations. That must take so much effort. you know, two buckets, carry them upstairs. What is that? You know, and devotees have to spend so much time and energy to cook those meals, to clean everything, to take it, to serve it out, to pay for it all. I mean, people think this just all happens automatically. Right? Do service, that's the point. Don't just enter in the spirit of sense gratification in the name of Krishna consciousness. It's a dangerous mentality. So we have to do practical service to devotees. That's the point. Even if you're a senior devotee, but you need to do service. Right? Like Radhana Swami. Like, he's famous for his service attitude. So, you know, years ago in the Chaupati temple, he was on the roster. He put himself on the roster to clean the toilets. That's a Vaishnava. Goes and cleans the toilets. And everyone said, oh, Maharaj, you can't do that. He said, why can't I do that? Right? He was there. So, you know, cleaning the toilets. Right? That's what it means to be a devotee. Right? You have to do something practical. Otherwise, you just get, you know, everyone gives you worship, and then you get inflated by that. Yeah, puffed up. Yeah, very good. It's not the mood of a devotee, actually. Okay.
Sorry. Is it service or menial service?
Both, but there has to be an element of menial service. Yeah. There has to be an element of menial service like that. Because it means sometimes your service is not necessarily do the menial stuff. You know, you have to do like all the management or the preaching and that. That's not necessarily menial. They're the services where you get the respect. But even the devotees do that, they have to do some menial stuff as well. Otherwise you get bewildered. Any points?
This morning, Bhagavatam class, Maharaj was mentioning that the temple president and the authority of the temple, they are the representative of the spiritual master. So we should not only listen to the spiritual master, we should be under the guidance of them if we want to progress in the spiritual life.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. That was Prabhupada's system, actually. And my Guru Maharaj told me that. He said if Aniruddha Prabhu or Korma Prabhu, because Korma Prabhu used to be in this temple, he said if they tell you something, you take it as coming from me. So that should be the mentality. Senior devotees are speaking, they're speaking on behalf of the Guru, generally speaking. So, any other points?
I was listening to a lecture of God after a long time ago, and he was mentioning that, you know, like how he was a speaker and very well recognized for his lecture. So he was saying that, you know, whenever you see very puff, because after a lecture, so many devotees come and praise you, it was such a nice class and all. So he said after that, I think Radhanath Maharaj has instructed, go and do some menial service so your ego comes down. So most of the devotees, like Gaurang Prabhu is in charge of putting the Meha Yatras and all, he books in the background for 5,000 people, all 3 meals.
Yeah, it always turns out. It's quite amazing how good the prasadam is as well, considering the amount of people they're cooking for. Yeah, nice devotee. Go on. Any other points? Okay, so Keshi represents. Yeah, I'm a great devotee and a guru, and also Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the false ego arising from attachment from wealth and material accomplishments. So if you've got money, you feel it. Like a ego comes up. And if you get any material accomplishment, you know, as we're saying, like you're good at giving classes or good at cooking feasts or anything, whenever you accomplish something, you get this ego. But this is Keshi, represents these things.
Action
of Keshi is making him represent all these animals. Like with Kalia, you know, he was having so much anger, and also the fact that he has come running like this in Vrindavan and disturbing. Yeah, like that, or the fact that he's a horse. Horses are very proud. So it's like that form of a horse. Horses are very, they have that pride about them.
Translation also says roaring like a lion. He responded by roaring. Roaring like a lion is a sign of that I am an authority. I can roar it. I can yell at him. It's almost like that. Not accepting the authority of God.
Yeah. Good.
Did you say it comes from material.
Yeah, he gets the money. Which pasan was it? Mani Griva Nalakavara, I think. That if you get money, you become intoxicated. And I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur said back then that, especially if you, out of all the Janma Aishwarya Shuta Shribya, he said all of them the most dangerous is wealth. If you have money, you really get puffed up. Is, say, like, what's that guy in America, the president?
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. So you see, he, you know, he's got so much money. So he's just, you know, he's got like a real air about him. You know, he's got some nice qualities as well. Not like he's all bad, but, you know, it just happens when you got money, you just become like flooded with pride and ego. It's dangerous. If you have money, you've got to use it in Krishna's service. That's the point. It's okay being rich, but you have to use that wealth in Krishna's service. Not just buy nice cars and things like that. Any other points?
Problem is we don't need too much wealth to get attached to it.
What's that?
Problem is we don't need too much wealth to get attached to it. You know, like a poor goes, a pauper is proud of his daddy. Even if we have the TV, we get attached to it and we come proud.
Yeah. Yeah, I have that realization because every time I ask you guys for fees, it's like trying to take the teeth. It's like trying to take teeth out of your mouth. Right? And you get the books and you add up all the weeks. And you see how many weeks, and then and they start bothering with me. Oh, Prabhu, what about this week? I want to have that week. Come on. I don't care. Just pay your fees.
There could be forgetfulness also in that, Prabhu.
What is that?
There could be forgetfulness also in that, not just attachment to wealth.
Could be a lot of things. You see, it's hard for devotees. And actually, Aniruddha Prabhu told me, it's actually a concern, a serious concern. He said on the donor list, the initiated devotees in the congregation give less than the uninitiated devotees. That's a concern, actually. You know, we get initiated in ISKCON and we give less money. But there's something actually wrong with that. You know, those of us who are initiated should be giving more, not less. It's the people who are not initiated, they give more. So it's a mentality. It's some mentality everyone has. Like, you know, we can come to the temple and everything's just free and get as much as you can, you know, bring your kids, bring your family, you know, fill up, you know, take all your plates. I see everyone walking down the road with like 10 plates. Really, it's actually, there's a bit of an exploitive mentality, actually. It's actually like that. It's not very good. But, you know, everyone's got it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think it is a bit, because we haven't got much knowledge about the spiritual knowledge, and we don't develop love for Lord, that's why. And all these things happen to the people, everything.
Yeah. Ultimately.
Yeah.
Okay. Seeing the Lord standing before him, Keshi ran toward him in extreme rage, his mouth gaping as if to swallow up the sky. Rushing with furious speed, the unconquerable and unapproachable horse demon tried to strike the lotus-eyed Lord with his two front legs. But the transcendental Lord dodged Keshi's blow and then, with his arms, angrily seized the demon by the legs, whirled him around in the air and contemptuously threw him the distance of 100 bow lengths, just as Garuda might throw a snake. Lord Krishna then stood there. Then Krishna just grabs him, just throws him, then just stands there. That's why you have to read the Bhagavatam. Because if you read the Bhagavatam, you'll become attached to Krishna.
Yeah.
Krishna is the, as Burajan Prabhu said a few years ago, he is the coolest out of everyone.
Just to give you a bit of a perception about horses, I used to have a horse before.
Okay.
And,
in Fiji?
Yeah.
Oh, here?
Yeah. It was with the aunt. She used to have a horse.
Yeah.
And I used to feed him every day. Mm. And one day I just held him with the rope and it was tied on his neck. And I just showed him a whip. I just showed him, and he just did his head like that. I flipped backwards and fell on the other side of the horse. He just did his head like that. I was holding onto the rope. That's how strong they are. So yeah. We're talking the strength of Krishna here.
Just grabs him, just throws him. Yeah, my brother brought a horse at the farm, and then he brought him down to show me, and then you know he jumped off the back of it, and it just went like that. Yeah, jumped up. You know how they jump up? And he just went flying off, landed on the ground. So Krishna just throws him, and he just stands there.
And here the horse is actually 10 times bigger than Krishna in size.
Yeah, it's like a large, like demoniac horse. Shows Krishna's potency. Upon regaining consciousness, Keshi angrily got up, opened his mouth wide, and again rushed to attack Lord Krishna. But the Lord just smiled and thrust his left arm into the horse's mouth as easily as one would make a snake enter a hole in the ground. So Krishna just puts his whole fist and arm straight down his throat. And first of all, as he's running towards him, he puts his thumb up. And it's the thing they do in Vrindavan, the kids, they kind of go like this, like, it's like a way of being cheeky. They go like, you know. So then Krishna, in case he's running, Krishna's just going like, you know, like that. And then he comes and he just puts his arm straight down his throat. So powerful. Keshi's teeth immediately fell out when they touched the Supreme Lord's arm, which to the demon felt as hot as molten iron. Within Keshi's body, the Supreme Personality's arm then expanded greatly, like a diseased stomach swelling because of neglect. So as we saw in the last chapter as well, Krishna can be as strong as a thunderbolt or as soft as a rose. So you see with the demons, he pulverizes them. And we see what he did with Arishta in the previous chapter, what he's doing with Keshi in this chapter. And so Krishna's like that with his devotees also. If he sees the devotee doing nonsense, you get the thunderbolt. And if you behave nicely, you get the robes. And Prabhupada said, the deities are the barometer of bhakti. So when you go and see the deities, like after class we go and see the deities, or before class we see them, you go in and then you see everyone, right? And you see the smiles on their face. Prabhupada said that is the barometer of bhakti. You know if you're doing well just by looking at the deities. You know, sometimes I go to see them, I see one of them or some of them or all of them are not happy, then I know, okay. And then I have to reflect. Maybe I treated one devotee not properly, or I did something not properly. Or, you know, everyone has their own relationship with the deities. And particular deities will give you a particular reciprocation. Who is the most merciful out of everyone on the altar?
Nityananda
Prabhu. Most merciful. Radharani is there. She's extremely merciful. Jagannath, Balaram, extremely merciful. Mahaprabhu himself. Krishna himself, but the most merciful is Nityananda. And out of everyone, I've been worshipping these deities for a long time, and out of everyone, Nityananda gives me the hardest time. I don't know why, I still don't understand. He's the most merciful, but with me, he's you know, everyone else will be smiling, and they'll look at him, and he's just looking at me. Nityananda.
Oh, yeah, I'm scared of him.
You're scared of him? Yeah. I'll hide behind you. Everyone else like gives me smiles, but then I look at him and he's always, you know, not always, but a lot of the time he's like, he's saying to me, you can do more, you can do more. Right? Yeah. Don't relax. As soon as you relax in devotional service, you can't advance. You have to always be improving yourself. And even when you're doing well, even when I feel like I'm doing well, you know, I do a lot of service and, you know, something, I accomplish something in Krishna's service, and I go in front of these, I offer it to them, I look at them, they're all smiling, I look at Lord Nityananda, and he says, yes, but there's still defects there. Yeah. He just keeps doing that. So that's the nature of the guru. The guru, even when you're doing very well, the guru will point out the faults. Because he wants you to become a pure devotee in Krishna's service.
Yeah, I feel as if he's saying you're not up to the point yet.
Yeah. Yeah, he says it to me every day. Even Giriraj, I worship Giriraj, even Giriraj is very merciful to me. But it's an underprivileged, he's always strict. Everyone has their different deities. As Lord Krishna's expanding arm completely blocked Keshi's breathing, his legs kicked convulsively, his body became covered with sweat, and his eyes rolled around. The demon then passed stool and fell on the ground, dead. The mighty-armed Krishna withdrew his arm from Keshi's body, which now appeared like a long kaka-tika fruit. Without the least display of pride at having so effortlessly killed his enemy, the Lord accepted the demigod's worship in the forms of flowers rained down from above. So it says that Keshi, because he put his arm in his mouth and he made it expand and become hot, and then Keshi passed stool and urine, his eyes were bulging and he fell down dead on the ground, and then his body split, you know, like when a fruit is in the sun and it's been there for too long, and then it just kind of cracks and juice starts coming out. So his body, well, it like kind of expanded and blew up, and then it cracked, and then his fluids were running out and like that. So Krishna just smashed him. It says here that, what's the interesting point in this verse about Krishna's behavior?
He was not pride.
Yeah, it says here he did not display any pride. So what does that teach us?
Learn humility.
Yeah. When we do something great, you have to learn to curb the pride.
Sober.
Yeah, be sober. And because when you become advanced in Krishna consciousness, we understand that ability comes from Guru and Krishna himself. Right? So when we do something, then we have to think, well, Krishna actually allowed that to take place. Guru's mercy allowed that to take place. So then, give up pride. So Krishna was not proud. Right? Another reason Krishna was not proud is because he's Krishna. What was the big deal about it? Just one little horse. Yeah, he can smash the whole universe apart if he wants. So one little horse, it's not actually a big deal. So he's not going to become proud about it. It's like us, you know, we do something little, then we look around and we sort of, you know, look to everyone. See, is everyone, you know, impressed? You know, we just did one little thing. But then we always think, oh, you know, is everyone impressed by what I did? Krishna, I mean, for him this was not a big thing. But he's teaching us. We should learn to give up pride, which is actually not that easy to do. It's not that easy not to be proud. It takes a lot of practice. My dear King, thereafter, Lord Krishna was approached in a solitary place by the great sage among the demigods, Narada Muni. That most exalted devotee spoke as follows to the Lord, who effortlessly performed his pastimes. So I'll read the purport. Chandan, you want to read
that? After speaking in Kansa, Narada went to see Lord Krishna. Lord Vrindavan's pastimes were nearly completed, and Narada wanted to see those he would think at Kansa.
Is there any points here? Why is he eager?
He doesn't want Krishna to stay there only. As Krishna is in varieties of rasas.
Are you eager to see these pastimes? Are you eager to see these pastimes? You are? Or are you eager to see Krishna stay in Vrindavan and not leave Vrindavan?
Yes,
see
Krishna. I want to see him.
Yeah. Right. We should be feeling, if we've made some advancement, we should be feeling that this is coming to an end. Right. And actually, our heart should be breaking. Right. If we're actual followers of Lord Chaitanya, right, if we're actually Rupa Nuga Vaishnavas, which we should be, our heart should be breaking at this point of the Bhagavatam. In just the thought that Krishna is about to leave Vrindavan. Right. That's the actual mood of the followers of Lord Chaitanya, of Rupa Goswami. So Narada, he's orchestrating Krishna's pastimes because Krishna has a mission to fulfill on this earth. So he's facilitating because he knows the Lord's desire. The Lord has come for particular reasons, so therefore he's helping to facilitate. So he understands, okay, Vrindavan is finishing. Now he will go to Mathura and Dwarka. But actually, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. This will come out in the following chapters. Even though he appears to leave, the original form does not leave. The Swayam Bhagavan, the original form of Krishna, never leaves Vrindavan. This is just the Vasudeva feature, or the expansion, which goes. Narada Muni said, O Krishna, Krishna, unlimited Lord, source of all mystic power, Lord of the universe, O Vasudeva, shelter of all beings and best of the Yadus, O Master, you are the supreme soul of all created beings, sitting unseen within the cave of the heart like the fire, dormant within kindling wood. You are the witness within everyone, the supreme personality, and the ultimate controlling deity. So Narada gives a nice verse in prayer. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives a nice commentary. He breaks down all the Sanskrit, each word practically. So the first thing that Narada says is,
unlimited.
Yeah, Krishna, Krishna. Why does he say it twice?
To emphasize?
Yeah. Why else?
Because he loves Krishna so much.
Very good. What else?
He is the Supreme Personality.
Yeah. What else? Because he's feeling blissful. And when you're overwhelmed in bliss, Rupa Goswami says, I wish that I had millions of tongues to chant the holy name of Krishna. One tongue is not sufficient to taste all the sweetness in the holy name of Krishna, and two ears are not as sufficient to hear, because there's so much nectar in the two syllables, Krishna, that I wish I had millions of ears and millions of tongues. So because Narada is a prema bhakta, when he chants Krishna, Krishna. Because when you are actually pure, you cannot stop chanting. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu received initiation from Ishwarapuri, whereabouts?
Yeah.
In Gaya. Where is Gaya?
In Bihar,
yeah. It's about 6 hours from Mayapur. Atul Prabhu was telling me. He's been there. He went there recently. He said it's about 6 hours from Mayapur.
Near Patna,
yeah. In Bihar. So you go across?
No.
You're from that place? Okay. You're from Bihar?
Yeah.
Acha. You know, the most crime in India is in Bihar.
Love it, Prashant.
Everything is making sense now.
You know what? Where there is crime, Krishna comes.
Yeah? You people always have an explanation for this. Okay, so to get back to the actual point. Right? Now I know, all these years you hid this from me. I thought you were over from Agra near him, but no, no, no. Just see all the boxing, all these things. I know. Okay, so it's Gaya. It's about 6 hours from Mayapur. It's across there in Bihar. And Chaitanya Mahapuri took initiation from Ishwarapuri, and then when he took initiation, Ishwarapuri gave him the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And he gave him the instruction, Kirtaniyaha Sada Hari. So Lord Chaitanya went and he chanted all night without sleeping. And the next day he came back to Ishwarapuri. And Ishwarapuri said, how was your chanting? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I do not understand what this mantra is that you've given me, because I cannot stop chanting it. My tongue has become independent. It would just chant Krishna, Krishna, unlimitedly. So when we have prema bhakti, like Narada, we will just chant spontaneously and ecstatically. Do you ever feel like that sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when you chant japa nicely, you just can't stop. Sometimes when I go to Mayapur, I chant my rounds. And I like to go and chant in Godrum Dweep at Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Samadhi on that side. So sometimes I go there just by myself and I chant. I remember one time when I finished chanting my rounds, I was walking back, but I couldn't stop chanting. Just my tongue just chanted, just kept chanting for about half an hour, just couldn't stop. But because I'm not pure, then you know, eventually something happens, you get distracted, and then you lose the momentum. But actually, when you're advanced, you can't stop yourself from chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So he says, Krishna, Krishna. And then... What is
Krishna,
that?
Krishna, Mahamaru.
Yeah. All that you see, the bridge bus is the many verses up until now where they say Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho, or they chant like this, Rama, Rama, like this. But when you're ecstatic, you will chant like that. So then the Sanskrit, the word Atma is used. You know? So Atma means?
Soul.
Soul, but it also means? Atma actually has a variety of meanings. It also means mind. It means that which is within. The soul, the mind, even the intelligence sometimes, the word Atma is used. So Krishna's mind. There is a verse in the Vedas which says, it is very difficult to understand the mind of a great personality. Someone who's very advanced. Very hard to understand what's in their mind, their heart. Like Prabhupada, very hard to understand what's going on inside the mind and the heart. So with Krishna, it's the most difficult to understand because he's Krishna, he's unlimited. So they cannot understand what is in the mind and the heart of the Lord. But Narada, because he is a pure devotee, he can understand. And he understands that Krishna has a desire to go to Mathura and to Dwarka. Now, whenever the Lord appears, there is an external reason for the Lord appearing and an internal reason. So what is the external reason? Just like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it describes in the Adi Lila, in chapter 3, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami explains the external reason for Lord Chaitanya's appearance, and in chapter 4, he explains the internal reason. So what is the external reason why the Lord appears?
Preach the holy name.
Yeah, to spread the Yuga Dharma. Yeah. So Krishna, the external reason he appears in this case is that he needs to kill the demons. That's not his real reason for appearing. But this is the external reason. So therefore, Narada understands. You need to go to Mathura, you need to go to Dwarka, because it is time for you to kill demons. And you see when he goes to Mathura, he starts, you know, he fights with Jarasandha. And then when he gets to Dwarka, that's when it really starts. And then Shalva and all the Dandavakra, Shishupala, all the big demons come out. Yeah, the war, Kurukshetra, like that. So many personalities needed to be destroyed. The earth needed to be rid of these personalities. So Krishna was doing that. But the internal reason, right, is extremely confidential. This is because in Vrindavan, you know the pastime we've told where Radharani is sitting on Krishna's knee at Prema Sarovar, which is near Vashana. And then the bee comes and Krishna says to Mother Mangala, chase the bee away, because Radharani is scared of the bee. And then Mother Mangala chases the bee, but when he comes back, he said, Madhusudan is gone. And then Srimati Radharani, what does she do? Right? She begins to cry uncontrollably, feeling separation from Krishna. But where is she? She's here. She's sitting on Krishna's lap. Right? She has her arms around him. But she's overwhelmed in separation. And then Krishna becomes overwhelmed, and both of them begin to cry in separation from each other. Hard to understand, isn't it? So exalted. Brinda's face. Brinda goes. Because she's explaining to us. It's very difficult to understand. Very hard to understand. Krishna's level of consciousness, Radharani's level of consciousness, very difficult to understand. It's theoretical to us, to a large degree. So Krishna begins to think, after this pastime takes place, he thinks, their separation is becoming so intense, even when I'm here, practically their life is in danger just by having me here. Because they're getting to the point that the separation is so intense, even in my presence, they're going to such deep levels of love of God, it may be more merciful for me to leave them and to go to Mathura and then not to be around and have to go through this intense agony and suffering which they go through in separation from me. Does everyone understand this? Theoretically. I don't mean realizing it, but... Can I repeat it? Yeah. So it means that Krishna is thinking at this point, after this pastime takes place with the bee and Radharani, he thinks that in my association, me being here is beginning to make them so mad, and they're feeling such intense levels of mahabhav, of intense feeling towards me, that sometimes when they think that I'm not here when I am here, the emotions are so powerful, it looks like they're almost going to leave their body in separation, even though I'm here. So he thinks that if I go away from Vrindavan, I'm not physically present, they won't go through so much intensity caused by my presence. So he thinks that will be less than me actually staying. Does that make sense? I mean, theoretically. Yeah, I don't mean realizing it, because we're not asking anyone to realize this. It's beyond, you know. But do you theoretically understand? Yeah, you understand it. Okay. So this is why. So Narada is understanding. He needs to leave Vrindavan now. So they're assisting him in moving to Vrindavan. So they'll say the external reason. The external reason is, he needs to kill the demons. So they're saying, okay, come to Mathura, kill Kamsa, and then start killing everyone else who needs to be killed. But this is actually it's external. It's not the real internal reason.
What's the different perspective to as well, having a referral of like him moving away? Do
you
actually have more intense desire to meet up with him?
Yeah, naturally. He knows that's going to happen. But there's different types of separation. There's four types of separation. One is when he goes for the long time. One is when he's actually there. One is when they haven't met him yet, like the Purva Rag. So there's different types of separation. So he thinks that the long-term one, where I'm just gone and they don't keep seeing me, that'll be easier than this one, where I'm actually there and then they think of bees. Yeah, and they hear I'm gone and I'm actually there. Because I'm actually there, that just intensifies it all. So These are very, very, very deep topics. Very deep. But this is the heart of the Bhagavad Gita. We can't understand it, but at least we can theoretically understand it. In terms of realizing it, it's beyond comprehension.
What is the internal reason for Krishna Kapila?
Internal reason is to give, he says in the Gita, Paritranaya Sadunam.
So,
yeah, no, no, Paritranaya means the internal reason is to associate with devotees and to attract others to his pastimes. That's the internal reason. The external reason is to re-establish religion and to kill the demons.
Could it be the act of your maya, or is it doing your morality?
Is that you?
Is it the act of your maya to send Naraji to Lord Krishna?
Yeah.
Because, you know, the same thing happened in Ramayana as well.
Yeah.
The Saraswati came and to change the idea, you know, the thought of Kekai. And Ramchandra was really grateful to Kekai. Everybody was, you know, defaming her.
Yeah.
But he was so grateful that she helped him.
She rendered service.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like that.
So it's like my.
Yeah. Yep. And that's interesting because the next piece of Sanskrit which Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out is Yogesha. Yoga Isha. The controller of yoga or yoga maya. Because Krishna controls Yogamaya, Narada is indicating he can be in both places simultaneously. So he's saying, come to Mathura, but just because you come to Mathura doesn't mean that you've left Vrindavan. So he appears to leave Vrindavan. Akrura is going to come in the next few chapters, take him. But actually, he's always there. This is Yogamaya. So these are very deep pastimes. We'll discuss this in the next few weeks. And then Krishna says, there's actually in this verse, because there's two verses there, 10 and 11, after 10 is spoken, then Krishna speaks. It's not written in the Bhagavad Gita, but Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, Krishna says to Narada, I act according to my desires. So why do you request me to go somewhere? Everyone knows I do whatever I want. So why are you asking? Why do you even ask? You should come to Mathura. Everyone knows I'll do whatever I want anyway. And Narada says, he gives the reply, he says, you're making me speak like this.
Yeah.
Narada says, you are making me speak like this. Because inside, as Paramatma, you are indicating to me you want to go to Mathura now. So then you're inspiring me to say, my Lord, I think you should go to Mathura now. So actually it's you who is doing it. Same if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Ramananda Roy is speaking to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramananda Roy says to Lord Chaitanya, he says, actually, you are speaking. The words are just coming out of my mouth. Yeah. And Haridas Thakur says the same thing too in the Harinam Chintamani. He says, actually, you speak. I just am like the puppet. Okay.
Prabhupada says, Krishna wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Okay, any questions?
Choose one of them and glorify and then ask. One of the ones is prayer. Sometimes Brahma is doing it, sometimes Indra is doing it.
Just make sure you ask for the right thing. Don't ask for a new car. You are the shelter of all souls, and being the supreme controller, you fulfill your desires simply by your will. By your personal creative potency, you manifested in the beginning of the primal modes of material nature. And through their agency, you create, maintain, and then destroy this universe. You, that very same creator, have now descended on the earth to annihilate the Daitya, Pramata, and Rakshasa demons who are posing as kings, and also to protect the godly. The horse demon was so terrifying that his neighing frightened the demigods into leaving their heavenly kingdom. But by our good fortune, you've enjoyed the sport of killing him. So for Krishna, this is just
sports.
Just lila. It's pleasure. Everything Krishna does is pleasurable. Even killing someone, it is pleasurable. How can you kill someone and it can be pleasing? Can you imagine killing someone? We can't even imagine doing it. But you kill someone and it's pleasing. Because when Krishna kills someone, it is auspicious. Because that living entity gets purified and elevated. Right? And for Krishna, it is actually pleasing. It's satisfying. He does it all in a mood of enjoying pastime. Because there is no death. There's only the body changes, that's all. That's what he teaches in the Gita. So Krishna is enjoying these pastimes. Okay, so next week we will continue chapter 37.
What's the difference between that death, Pramata, and Rakshasa?
Asura, Pramata, Rakshasa, Pata. The different races of demons. Daitya, different races. All demons. So please keep up with your fees, right? Otherwise I'll start taking your teeth. Choice is yours. Choice is yours. Okay, so I have the open book topics for the next section, so if you need them, just come and get them. And we also have the key memory verses. Has everyone got them? Shri Chaitanya already said it, so everyone has. Okay, so you know what the verses are.